This is Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome, everybody, to Prop Points. Jeff Erickson here with Nick Whalen, and we've got an exciting show for you today. We are super excited to talk a lot of NBA. I don't know about super excited, actually, because I'm a little dour right now about my Pacers and their effort in Game 5 last night. But the Knicks won, forced Game 6. We'll do play it or pass it. Knicks and Pacers. I do have a lot to say, actually. And I'll tell you what I am excited about. College baseball. Johnny Venezia is going to join us today, help us break down the regional round of the college baseball playoffs. College Baseball World Series just got started today. I got ESPN News on one of the TVs with their whip around with like three screens going at once on those games. A lot of fun watching that. We'll talk some MLB slate today, talk about some strikeouts, some money lines, you name it there. We're going to cover that as well. Nick, got to start off, though, with the lead story, Pacers-Knicks. This game was not, for one iota, one moment, in doubt for the Knicks. There may, you know, it was 12-10 at one point. Okay, fine. That was the moment, you know, maybe at one point the Pacers put on mini runs to get it to get a little closer. But all along, the Knicks were played a tenacious level of defense that we've only seen once, and that was the second half of Game 3. They did it from the opening tip. They kept the ball out of Halliburton's hands. It worked, did wonders, and, you know, the other starters in particular could not step up, especially Andrew Nembhard.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about Nembhard yesterday, and, you know, I think obviously a lot of the talk coming out of last night is going to be focused on Tyrese Halliburton with just an all-time no-show in a big spot. But yeah. I think both Nembhard and Nesmith really not showing up last night. You know, I do wonder with Nesmith if that ankle's still bothering him. Only played 16 minutes, did feel like they went away from him pretty early, but it was clear he didn't have it. You know, he's 1 of 8 from the field, 1 of 5 from three. Nembhard is just not really looking to shoot anymore. There were a couple instances, Jeff, in the first half where he had a couple wide open looks from three. And I remember one in particular where he kind of pass fake, the defender, you know, goes with that fake, and then he just dribbled out of what was a wide open three. So I don't know if there's a confidence issue going on right now for Nembhard, but look, if Tyrese Halliburton is going to put up a 13.1% usage rate in a game like this, you're going to need that supporting cast to step up. And, you know, Miles Turner was brutal last night. Pascal Siakam was disappointing. Had some nice plays, I thought, defensively, but wasn't doing a whole lot scoring-wise. I mean, honestly, if Ben Mathurin didn't come off the bench, Jeff, and give you 23 points and go 9 of 9 from the free throw line, I think he's now taken 20 free throws in the last two games, this would have been even uglier. I mean, I actually thought the Pacers' ability to draw fouls, especially with some of those bench units, you know, toward the end of the second quarter, into the third quarter, that's really what prevented this from getting fully out of hand earlier.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And Mathurin can take it to the basket. I think that's one of the things that we're noticing. Like, Nembhard can't do that. Nesmith not really is his thing to break a guy down one-on-one. Yeah. He's a catch-and-shoot sort of guy. You know, Mathurin does have that ability. And I think the way the Knicks are playing defense, they've extended their defense. You need someone that can drive. And Mathurin is it. He you know, especially if Halley's not having a good day. And he wasn't. Strangely tentative game from Halliburton. And I think that spilled over to the rest of the Pacers offense. You know, Halliburton was passing up shots. He looked to wanting to get rid of the ball. And the Pacers offense would grind into the muck.
Yeah, I was really surprised at the version of Halliburton that we saw last night. You know, I kind of thought the Pacers, led by him, would relish this opportunity to go on the road to shut up the New York Knicks fans, end this series at Madison Square Garden. You know, it's a little Trae Young-like, you know, from that run a few years ago where you could just tell Halliburton throughout these playoffs has loved going into opposing buildings and kind of shutting up those crowds. But, I mean, it was clear like 3 minutes into the game, Jeff, that he just didn't have it. And, you know, credit to the Knicks defensively. You know, I was trying to watch closely, and it's like, I don't really think they're doing anything differently. They were just playing way harder. And, you know, Stan Van Gundy did a good job pointing that out on the broadcast. I mean, there was an uptick in energy defensively that clearly was not there in Game 4. They weren't giving up anything easy at the rim. They did a much better job, you know, closing in on Halliburton, even if he would beat that first defender. I mean, they forced the Pacers, who are one of the best teams in the NBA, right behind OKC in terms of taking care of the ball. They forced 20 turnovers. Indiana turned it over on 21% of their possessions last night. That is just not who the Pacers have been at any point this season or in the playoffs. And, you know, you can't have a game where Tyrese Halliburton takes 7 shots, you know, and it's not like, oh, no. He was, you know, he was passive early and he turned it on late. You know, you compare it to you know, some of those games for Anthony Edwards in the series for Minnesota. And this felt different. Like Edwards was just straight up getting shut down. Like he clearly wanted to do more and just couldn't, you know, he kept making the right basketball play. This was Halliburton just seemingly totally disinterested. You know, like I mentioned, that 13% usage rate, that is a crazy, crazy low number for Halliburton. I mean, he's been in the mid to high 20s all series. That was his fourth lowest usage rate in any game this season. And all the other games came in the regular season in blowout scenarios.
Yeah, absolutely. And they were doing some clutching and grabbing. They were, I know they do some isolations where they showed like Bridges was making sure it's part of the game. It's denying him the ball. I don't mean to say that it was anything untoward, maybe a little bit. After a made basket, that ball scooted away conveniently a lot of times. There weren't a lot of quick turnarounds on inbound passes. You know, all of a sudden it accidentally got kicked, you know. That happened a couple of times. But you know what? You know, that's part of the game. That's gamesmanship. If the refs aren't going to do anything to shut it down, you keep doing it there. They really slowed down the Pacers' tempo, and it all stems from Halliburton too. And you cut the head off the snake, and in this case, it really shut down the entire offense. Miles Turner got the three fouls early on. That didn't help matters. Siakam was the only starter I thought that really had even close to a decent game. The Pacers were relying on Jairus Walker to provide him good minutes. He did actually give him a couple of minutes. A couple of shots made, an offensive rebound off of a free throw, you know, little things like that. But, you know, it was just a clown show all around. It was just a tough look. It happens. I think they can flush it and move on to game six. I don't know necessarily if the Knicks stumbled onto a formula that they hadn't been doing necessarily or just played harder in this game.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I will note from a strategic perspective is I thought the Knicks did a better job picking up Halliburton almost full court, you know, kind of three quarters court, putting some pressure on him, you know, using McCall Bridges, even in a dead ball scenario, you know, making the Pacers just work to get the ball up. And, you know, they held Indiana, I think, to just 16 fast break points, which is actually pretty good considering how this game went, when it looked like for a while the Pacers were going to finish with like 70 points. But should not be surprising that this was easily their worst offensive game of the postseason in terms of offensive rating. Sixth worst offensive rating in any game this year. I mean, all their other games where they've been in the mid to low 90s in terms of offensive rating, I went and actually looked game by game. At least one key player was missing. So, I mean, you could make the case that given the circumstances, this was truly their worst offensive game of the year. And, you know, I think sometimes, Jeff, and maybe you'd give perspective as a Pacers fan here, sometimes you would rather lose a game like this where it feels like everything went wrong. You know, you're looking back and you're like, man, we never really had a chance to win that game the way we played, as opposed to, you know, that Minnesota game four, for instance, where it's like, man, everything went our way. Our bench players played an incredible game and we feel like maybe we can't replicate that two nights later. I think if you're Indiana, it's a little bit easier to watch the film from game five and say, all right, there are some obvious things that we can do better.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so too. All is not lost. Taking a look at look ahead, we're going to be doing a look at some props from this game for game six coming up. But game six, Pacers are 4-point favorites. Total is down at 219. It was 223.5. Remember, that got bet up a little bit there. I might be pivoting. In fact, I'll guarantee you right now, if that stays, if I'm out of betting window, I'm taking the over 219. I think that's an overcorrection. I think this is the whole point, is like, did they just figure something out? Is it going to continue or not? Because this is a pretty big swing on the total. 218.5 here now too.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. It was a great call by you on the under. You were a lot more optimistic than I was that the Knicks would have success slowing down that pace. But I think both teams honestly could play better offensively. You know, I think the Knicks had like 60 points in the paint. You know, we'll see if they can get there again. But Indiana was brutal from 2-point range. They couldn't finish anything around the rim, just 34 points in the paint. And the Knicks won this game by 18 or by what, 17? Not a math guy. And they went 8 of 29 for three.
Math is hard.
You know, they went 8 of 29 for three. Brunson was fantastic. You know, I think there was a little bit of a rope-a-dope with Kat. This is like the first time that the injury gamesmanship has ever worked. Like, obviously, we all knew Kat was playing, but it felt like the Pacers were not prepared for Karl Anthony Towns to, you know, look like essentially a healthy version of himself last night. So, you know, it feels like, you know, we're now two more days removed from that injury. He's going to be fine. I think both teams can certainly shoot it better from beyond the arc. And the big thing for Indiana, Jeff, like we mentioned, they're not turning it over 20 times again at home. And the Knicks committed 15 turnovers of their own, right? So I think both teams probably feel like they can play a crisper offensive game. So I would lean over on that as of now too.
Are you still using your buddy's gut instinct as your betting strategy? Come on, you deserve better. RotoWire has the real tools the pros use: rankings, projections, updates, and data that doesn't sleep. Whether you're making picks, setting your fantasy lineup, or placing bets, our award-winning insights give you the edge you need. Get started today by heading over to rotowire.com and entering ROTO15 at checkout for 15% off any RotoWire product. We'll just mention here that the Edmonton Oilers have advanced to the Stanley Cup. We'll have hockey guests next week to preview the rematch between Edmonton and Florida. Just kind of interesting there that they are playing the same finals as we had last year there, and congrats to both of those teams. Now, the Dallas Stars have lost three straight Western Conference finals. Game one will be on June 4th. That's on Wednesday. Minus 110 for both teams to win. So, pretty even match as far as that goes. Total in that first game is 5.5 goals. So we'll address more of that. We'll have one of our experts come on to do that as well. Going back to Pacers Knicks game six, I know you already have a couple of plays for that tomorrow, Nick.
Well, first of all, thank you for not asking me to comment on hockey at all. Interesting that it's minus 110 both ways. Not a hockey guy. I am an NBA guy at heart. It feels like you kind of have to choose one or the other. Yeah, we'll be playing some play it or pass it with some props for game six in just a little bit here. But a couple that I do like, OG Anunoby over 1.5 steals is minus 110 right now. He has had 3-3, 1-2, 3-2 steals over his last six games. This will be another high minute night for him, assuming this game is much closer. I like him to go over again. And look, Ben Mathurin, man, over 13.5 PRA, minus 115, 43 points alone in the last two games.
All right, there you have it. Play it or pass it. Knicks Pacers style coming up. We got Johnny Venezia after that on the Progressive Guest Line talking college baseball. This is Prop Points.
Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back to Prop Points. Jeff Erickson and Nick Whalen. We are with rotowire.com. We are going to do one of our favorite games. It's called Play It or Pass It. Michael Cohen selects a prop for us, and we decide whether to play it or pass it. Let's start off. Jalen Brunson, game six, over 31.5 points at minus 115. Nick Whalen. Play it or pass it.
I think I have to play it, Jeff. I think we're getting a reasonable price here. The Brunson number continues to creep up. I think it was 29.5 earlier in the series. Now we're up to 31.5. He's cleared this in 3 of 5 games. Also had a 31-point game in game four. So really four of these five games, he's been at least right there, averaging 33 points per game for the series. And one thing that stuck out to me, obviously it was somewhat of a blowout scenario, but still saw relatively big minutes for the Knicks starters, although 34 for Jalen Brunson is nothing too crazy. Still got to 32 points last night, but only 4 free throw attempts. I would imagine he's back closer to that 8 to 10 free throw attempt range where he sat for most of the series. So maybe left a little bit on the table there last night. And obviously if the Knicks are going to extend this, if they're going to force a game seven back at home, they need Brunson to have a big game. It's that simple. Outside of Karl Anthony Towns, who's been really good in this series, you never know what you're getting night to night from OG Anunoby. You never know what you're getting from Mikal Bridges. They're still very much hit or miss game to game. They're not getting a ton of reliable offense out of this bench. So, even at 31.5, we're certainly in uncomfortable territory. Anytime you're over 30, I think we got to play it.
All right. Very good. We are playing the very first one here. Second one. I heard a little bit of this on Money Moves about Mitchell Robinson on just how his minutes are shrinking. Play it or pass it. Over 6.5 rebounds, minus 130 price.
Yeah, 6.5 is a reasonable number. I don't love the price here, given what you mentioned as far as the minutes. You look at his five games so far in this series. He's had 8 rebounds in game one, 9 in game two, and then 6, 7, and 6 over these last three games. So he's right in that range on average. But much like Rudy Gobert in the Timberwolves Thunder series, Robinson's role really depends on game flow. If the Knicks are leading or the game is really close, he could see 25 plus minutes as he did early in the series. But when the Knicks are trailing, it's really hard to keep Mitchell Robinson on the court. You need points. You need to keep up with this Pacers team. So I would say my evaluation of this prop kind of depends on game flow or how you think that game will play out. Even in game five, though, when the Knicks did hold a lead essentially the entire game, he still only saw 20 minutes. Played the entire first quarter, all 12 minutes, didn't play at all in the second quarter, then saw only 8 minutes the rest of the way. I think part of the reason for that is Tibbs is getting a little bit more comfortable going a bit smaller with some of these bench guards. Josh Hart has gotten back on track over the last two games. You know, not that he provides the same size as Mitchell Robinson, but the rebounding ability is certainly there. So too many variables for me, Jeff. Even at 6.5, I got to pass this one.
All right. I'm bored with you on that one, too. I think that they've found a few different things in their rotation. I think they've worked for them the last couple of games. Number three, Miles Turner, over 18.5 points and rebounds at -115. What say you, Nick Whalen? Play it or pass it?
This is just a clear stay away for me. I'm not saying I love the under. I can't bet this. I can't bet this. You know, Turner, he's averaging 16.8 points plus rebounds for the series, but he has gone over in 3 of 5 games. But the thing is, when he is going over, he's barely going over. He's had some foul trouble, just really hasn't been overly effective, hasn't looked comfortable to me for the bulk of this series. I thought he looked completely lost, as did most of the Pacers, to be fair, last night. Played only 24 minutes, had 4 turnovers, took only 3 shots. I do think he'll be better at home, but this has just not been a good series for him matchup-wise. You know, and we're getting to the point now where Rick Carlisle is clearly not afraid to go to Obi Toppin. You know, we saw Jairus Walker play double-digit minutes last night. You know, Thomas Bryant, Tony Bradley, they've made appearances throughout this series. So, you know, Turner is kind of in that zone now for Carlisle, where if he doesn't have it right away, there can be a quick hook. So there's just, you know, too much concern, you know, about the minutes for me right now with Miles Turner. So I got to pass this one.
All right. I agree with you about home road, by the way. I do think that Turner is better at home, more comfortable at home. And he seems to be like a someone who needs those home creature comforts. But we'll see about that. And I think you're right to focus on the foul trouble as well. Smarter bets start with VSiN Pro. And now is the time to join. Through May 31st, lock in 14 months for just $199. 2 extra months free when you use promo code PRO at checkout. That's less than 50 cents a day for a daily email with best bets from VSiN hosts and guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, 24/7 live video and replays on the VSiN Watch app, full access to VSiN.com's analytics, trends, and expert breakdowns, plus get the 2025-26 NFL betting guide when it drops this summer. This limited time offer ends May 31st, so don't miss out. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe and use promo code PRO to sign up now. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Going to go on to prop number 4 on Play It or Pass It. Tyrese Halliburton, over 20.5 points at -120. Play It or Pass It, Nick.
So Halliburton, despite the big game 4, has now gone under this number in 3 of the last 4 games and 6 of his last 9 dating back to the Cleveland series. So, you know, the big question is, will there be a clear knee-jerk reaction to how quiet he was in game 5? I mean, that was, like we said, an alarming no-show to me. And obviously with the series going back home, you just expect that to not be the case in game 6. But I don't know, man. I don't know. I mean, that was a really, really strong defensive effort from the Knicks. I think what they did effort-wise is at least replicable. And, you know, we know Tyrese Halliburton, even when things are going well for the Pacers, he still prefers to operate more as a distributor than he does a scorer. They've won plenty of games in these playoffs where Tyrese Halliburton isn't putting up a 32-point triple-double. So I don't think he goes into every game in the same mindset of an Anthony Edwards, where it's like, all right, I got to score 30 tonight. You know, it's like, I'll do it if I have to. But, you know, he prefers to act more as a distributor. So, you know, I don't hate this one. 20.5 is certainly an attainable number. -120 is a fair price. I still think I'd rather target the assists. I know it's at 9.5, but that's been more steady than the points have been for Halliburton throughout the playoffs. Maybe even look at the points plus assists. You know, to me, I think I have a better feeling that the assists will be there over the points. I mean, even last night when he was completely disengaged, only had 10 potential assists, still finished with 6 assists. That's one that I would look at over the points.
Yeah, I'm just disengaged is such the right word too. It's so bizarre how he was so disengaged in this one here. Immediately in this game. It wasn't like, okay, right.
After this coronation game in game 5, right? Where if you're on Twitter in the last 24 hours, it's, man, is this guy a top 10 player? Man, look at how dumb the Kings were for trading him. And it's like, man, everything is rolling in your direction. It's hard to fathom. It's hard to fathom, you know, because again, the Knicks didn't, to me, do anything that was unexpected defensively.
Yeah. Very similar to last year's series against the Knicks, where game 5, the Pacers just got obliterated. We know that the Pacers were able to bounce back from that. So we know that that's still capable of happening here. All right. Game six, just generally, do the Knicks win at plus 145 and force a game seven? Play it or pass it, Nick.
You know, I've been riding with the Pacers all series. I was foolishly on the Pacers money line last night. I'm not sure I can just reverse that after one game. I will say, though, now for the first time in this series, Jeff, the pressure is firmly on the Indiana Pacers. Yeah, I think they've been able to play with a cushion. You know, that I've been saying all year or all week that, you know, they love playing on the road. That came crashing back down a little bit last night. But like we said, I think you would rather have a game like this where it feels like nobody plays well, your best player no shows, than a game where everybody plays well and you still come up short because you got outplayed. Yes, the Knicks can play better. Yes, they can shoot it better from three. But I think there's more of a leap that Indiana can make. And, you know, on balance, a game like we saw last night has been the clear outlier for the Pacers, who have been so consistent game to game. Feels like every game they're right around 50% from the field. You know, they don't have games where the offensive rating is in the low 90s. So I think the Pacers have a pretty good chance to bounce back. The Knicks do have renewed life. They maybe have a sense of confidence here. They look dead to me after game four, but I'm going back to the well. I'll be on the Pacers to close this thing out.
Yeah, I think this is also the first time that, you know, that they got behind and didn't have that comeback in them. You know, even the game they lost against Cleveland, remember, they were down like 15 in the first quarter. And by the end of the first quarter, they were tied again. They didn't have that run once in game five against the Knicks. This first time, like, they felt any sort of pressure at all in these playoffs. They lost game three to Milwaukee. And in that one that was an anomaly. It was, they were up at halftime and just a miracle shooting second half, you know, from some unexpected sources on the Bucks. You know, this is the first time they feel real pressure in the playoffs. Series odds, you know, for this series against the Knicks, now Pacers minus 360, Knicks plus 290. So it's still in their favor pretty significantly, but man, the Pacers can't get this to a game seven.
Yeah, and honestly, it says a lot, Jeff, that we watched that game last night and we're now talking about like how surprising it was that the Pacers didn't rally back from being down 20, you know, in the second quarter. We're like, where's the comeback? You know, and they even noted it on the broadcast with like 3.5 minutes left. They're like, well, this is when the Aaron Nesmith run started. And, you know, I think you could sense that if you're the Knicks, right? You're like, all right, we're at that same checkpoint. We cannot let this happen again. And yeah, for whatever reason, it never felt like that run was coming for the Pacers. And I think they get right. I think they end up closing out New York at home in game six. But if not, Jeff, we are going to have ourselves a hell of a game seven on Monday.
Yeah, I'm going to get out of town so I don't have to talk about it. Johnny Venezia is going to join us next. I'm talking college baseball here on Prop Points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back to Prop Points. It's College Baseball World Series time. The regionals started this week and started today. As a matter of fact, we got four games going on right now. Four scores for you. Florida getting thumped by East Carolina 10-2. A little bit of a surprise. We'll bring that up in a second. North Carolina up 4-0 on Holy Cross. Cincinnati up on Wake Forest 8-4. This was a high-scoring game. Hurley, the live total in that one has moved up to 20.5. Houston and Houston Christian in Texas are scoreless. ETSU and Louisville are scoreless. Rain delay in West Virginia, Kentucky. Here to help us talk college baseball is RotoWire's expert, Johnny Venezia, which you can follow on Twitter at @_JohnnyVTV. Read them on RotoWire. Use that promo code ROTO15 to get 15% off all of RotoWire's coverage there. Johnny, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today. Fun time of the year. I love this time. In fact, I think Super Regionals might be the best, but this weekend is also amazing.
This is chaos. This is like the first round of the March Madness tournament where you're sitting and vegging in front of the TV for like three consecutive days, eating like an absolute slob. It's noon to midnight, watching sports, betting on games. It is the best, man. This is my Super Bowl. I know the Super Bowl is like the biggest sports event in the world ever of the year, but this is my time. And I am so excited to be here with you guys. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, Johnny, before we get into some of your picks for the College World Series, some of your leans for tonight's slate, I do want to ask you, with college baseball being somewhat of a niche sport, at least when you compare it to the Big Four or even college football, college basketball, Have you found that there are more edges to exploit, or the market isn't quite as sharp as it is for some of those most popular sports?
Absolutely. You know, because college baseball is relatively still new, especially in the terms of in terms of betting, at least, there's not that many people that can legitimately handicap a game successfully over the course of a season, over the course of 2, 3, 4 years. So the good thing is, when you have people that can do that, then you're able to win long term. And I think because that also falls in the boat of sports books, where they're also learning how to set lines and, you know, adjust for movement. This is an opportunity to be able to make some money in this sport. And what really makes it difficult is the pitching, because pitching is so high variant and you only have a handful of guys that you can really rely on. So you're really have to digging into bullpens and different edges for you to be able to get a good bet down. And even if you do, you have to discern what's a fair price to bet on, because as we know, baseball in itself is the highest variant sport out there. But then you're adding in college with amateurs, with guys who are, A, either most likely never going to play professional baseball, and even fewer are going to make it to the majors and actually succeed. So there's always so much variance. And one thing to know is a lead is never safe in this sport.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're already starting to see that, you know, the Wake Forest Cincinnati game, it was 8-0 and now it's 8-4. And you're like, the live total has moved up so much, as we alluded to earlier there. Now, last year was fully dominated by the SEC and the ACC. All eight teams that made it to Omaha were from those two conferences. SEC is this monster monolith conference now. And, you know, the transfer window is so huge that, you know, the NIL era, they take it seriously. It means more in the SEC, as they say. Mm-hmm. Is this the life as we expect it now in college baseball? Or is the West going to rise again at any point? Or is this really what we should be expecting all along?
I mean, I think this is probably what we're going to expect for the near future. I know everybody has the notion that the SEC is a football conference and a bit of a basketball conference, but it's fully a baseball conference nowadays. The NIL and the transfer portal have opened the floodgates, and there is going to be a time where policing it and making potentially players sign contracts. So this, I'm here 1 year, somewhere else the next, is going to probably be a little bit more, I guess, controlled is the right word. But the SEC's got the resources, man, and they've always been a breeding ground for professional baseball. And truthfully, I think there's some other good programs, whether it's in the ACC or out West, but ultimately I think the SEC is going to run this sport for as long as they keep getting booster funds and are able to pay these players, because the best want to go to the best places. That's ultimately going to A, help them win, and B, help them get ready for the next level of their career.
Talking with Johnny Venezia, one of our college baseball experts over at RotoWire. He joins us on the Progressive guest line. So with that in mind, with the SEC being the kingpin conference, Johnny, I know you posted your picks for the final eight on our site earlier this week. You tweeted them out as well. You got six SEC teams in there, one from the ACC and one from the Big 12. So how did you narrow it down to those eight teams?
Well, what I like to do is pretty much stick with what I had preseason. Preseason, I had Texas, I had Tennessee, I had Texas A&M, UVA, UNC, Clemson, Georgia. And I don't remember if I'm missing anybody there, but I pretty much kept most of those teams. Clemson and LSU as well. LSU and Clemson would have to ultimately face each other in the super regionals, so one of them can't go. But basically what happens is, when you get a draw and you have an ideal path and you can look and see what every scenario is, I was able to come to the fact that Vanderbilt has one of the easier super regional draws and regional draws. So their pitching front to back is electric. They have one of my favorite arms in the country in J.D. Thompson, their Friday guy. I think he had a little bit of a down year, but he is one of the top arms in the country. And I think he should be a first rounder just because of the stuff he has. They have an electric reliever in Sawyer Hawks, one of the tops in the country. Great closer, Miller Green, and a timely offense. Tim Corbin's group is always very fundamentally sound. Texas, I liked since the preseason, Jim Schlossnagle bringing over one of the top pitching coaches from A&M and Max Wiener. His impact was felt immediately. They also have one of my favorite players in the country in Max Ballou, who just returned from a thumb injury after missing most of the season. LSU was one of my key three preseason winners. Jay Johnson has the best 1-2 punch in the rotation in Cade Anderson, Anthony Ianson. Ianson will be a quick draft riser, probably a first-round pick if he continues to do well. Very Cade Horton-esque, the kind of rise he's going to have. I also have Tennessee, Tony V, enough said. The Florida Gators, I liked them coming in because they were hot, and Kevin O'Sullivan has great postseason pedigree. So I thought he would be able to continue that. UNC I liked all year. They have a fantastic weekend rotation with Jake Knapp, ACC Pitcher of the Year. Jason DeCaro, top 2026 pitcher off the board, and Aiden Hawk. And they have a decent lineup. But Scott Forbes, I think, is going to have his group ready to go again. Ole Miss, I actually got Georgia as a preseason Omaha 8, but I don't know if they have enough pitching here. I think if Ole Miss can get out of their tough region, I actually have Oklahoma State beating Georgia in that region because I was able to get that at 10-1, and they ultimately have the best pitching in that region. But I think Ole Miss, with the veteran leadership, Hunter Elliott is a stud. He was a key piece in 22's title run. Mike Bianco's got a powerful lineup that has a lot of sources of production, and they're very experienced. So that's how I arrived to my Omaha 8.
All right, very good. We're going to talk about some picks for tonight, but first, the final jewel of the Triple Crown is here, the Belmont Stakes, and there's no better time to bet the races than right now with First Bet. New users can get a $200 sign-up bonus. Just use promo code VSIN200. Whether you're a seasoned horse player or brand new to the sport, First Bet has all the tools to elevate your game. Download the app or go to firstbet.com/VSIN to sign up today. That's firstbet.com/VSIN. Promo code VSIN200 for your $200 bonus. Johnny, let's look ahead to tonight. We got a couple of interesting games. Fresno State versus UCLA, UC Irvine versus Arizona State. Fun regional out there at UCLA. What do you like in those two games?
Yeah, I've been talking about Fresno State all week. I think Fresno State is live to win outright tonight. They have the pitching advantage with Jack Anker on the mound, who has 111 strikeouts, just 12 walks on the year, 91 innings. This kid's been great. His ERA is in the fives. It's bloated, but it's not as it seems. His Sierra is below three. He's pitching much better than what the numbers look like. And they have an absolute star in Murph Gray. UCLA is the most vulnerable host, in my opinion. They have some quality, but they don't have any dominant ace. That's why I think Fresno State can get after it at a huge plus money banger. And then UC Irvine is my pick to win this region. They've gotten steamed a little bit. They're the most complete team in this region. They have the Big West Pitcher of the Year reliever, Ricky Ojeda. And for those of you that don't know how hard it is to win a Conference Pitcher of the Year award as a reliever, I got news for you. Ricky Ojeda is going to match up really well out of the bullpen tonight against a predominantly Arizona State lefty lineup. ASU is the most talented team in this region, but they are wildly inconsistent, and that includes their ace, Ben Jacobs, who has big-time strikeout stuff, 114 tickets punched this year, but he's got 40 walks and 78 and two-thirds. That's not going to play here. I think if they played up to their potential, they can definitely win, but Irvine is more complete, top to bottom. I like them, and they're steaming out, and you're getting them at minus 145 right now. But I like Irvine and Fresno in the Los Angeles Regional on Friday.
All right, there we have it, Johnny. Awesome stuff, man. You can check out all of Johnny's picks, all of his work over at rotowire.com. Follow him on Twitter at @_JohnnyVTV. We got to talk some Major League Baseball when we come back. We got a big late slate in the majors tonight. Jeff Erickson going to hand out all of his favorite bets, all of his favorite props in Major League Baseball tonight. We'll do that next on Prop Points.
Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into Prop Points. Nick Whalen, Jeff Erickson hanging out with you for another 15 minutes here on the sports betting network. As always, coming up next, it's Make It Rain with Adam Schein. That starts up at 3 p.m. Eastern. He's going to have Justin Termini on the show today from SiriusXM NBA Radio. He'll be giving out his best bets for Game 6 between the Pacers and the Knicks. Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard. That's coming up at 4 p.m. Eastern. VSiN Primetime taking you home at 7. All right, Jeff, we got one game in action right now in Major League Baseball, Reds and the Cubs. This one at Wrigley Field. Reds up 2-0. TJ Friedl with a leadoff homer to start the game. Gavin Lux has an RBI single. We're about to head to the bottom of the second. Cubs closed as a minus 162 favorite on the money line. That's Andrew Abbott going up against Colin Ray. A lot of news items around baseball today, yeah. Jeff, before we get to your best bet. Mike Trout making his return tonight as the Angels take on the Cleveland Guardians. This will be his first appearance since April 30th.
Yeah, baseball's better when Mike Trout is good, healthy, and relevant, hopefully. The Angels aren't completely out of it. They had a hot streak, kind of cooled off since a little bit there, but I'm excited to get him back. A lot of leagues. We have a Friday lineup move, so make sure to get him active. A couple of big moves here going on with that. I know the Reds put Austin Hayes on the IL. Obviously, you're past that in terms of getting him going there. But, the Orioles put Cedric Mullins on the IL, so get him out of there. And I think the key one here, Nick, is the Rangers have Corey Seager back. And, this lineup is so much different with him than without him, especially, he's the one guy that they can use to kind of tackle against right-handers. Such a better lineup when he's in there.
Yeah, he made his return Wednesday after missing nearly 3 weeks. Rangers hosting Matthew Liberatore and the Cardinals later tonight. You mentioned Cedric Mullins, and it's somewhat of a footnote just because of how this Orioles season has gone so far. They're calling this a mild hamstring strain. Doesn't look like anything that's going to keep him out too long. Could be back in a couple of weeks. But Cedric Mullins is on a one-year deal, Jeff. He will be a free agent this winter. Could he be a trade candidate if the Baltimore Orioles do choose to go into sell mode?
Oh, yeah, 100%. 19-36, 16 games out already in the AL East. The season's done for.
Yeah.
They should be, this is a clear guy that they should be looking to sell. And probably they'll find a market. It will be underwhelming. You will be surprised at how little they'll get for Cedric Mullins, but they'll be able to trade him for something. He's almost certainly going to be able to be on that. He'll be liquid on that market. Orioles, they get the White Sox tonight, or actually this afternoon, as a matter of fact. I think that starts at 4:30 Eastern. So, it'll be, this is a good opportunity for them to start showcasing some other players, get some young players in that lineup.
Talked a lot about the Atlanta Braves on yesterday's show, Jeff. They were playing a doubleheader, lost the first game, won the second against the Philadelphia Phillies. But bad news for that Braves pitching staff. AJ Smith-Shawver headed to the 60-day IL, which is notable. He was hit by a comebacker yesterday. We thought that's why he was removed. Turns out he started feeling the elbow issue midway through that start. They're calling it a sprain. There's got to be some concern here, Jeff, when you're immediately headed to the 60-day IL. Decent chance we do not see Smith-Shawver again this season, I would guess.
Yeah, Mark Bowman from MLB.com reported that Smith-Shawver felt a pop in his elbow. Anytime you hear that phraseology, not great. Dr. James Andrews or someone of his ilk is in their future there, unfortunately, for the Braves. Bryce Elder will probably go back into that rotation as a result.
All right, let's take a look at some of the night slate for this Friday, Jeff. You got some plays for Yankees-Dodgers. We got the Yankees as a minus 122 favorite. Dodgers plus 102 on the money line. Total coming in at 9. Fun pitching matchup here. Max Fried, the lefty, going up against Tony Gonsolin.
Absolutely. World Series rematch here. Looking forward to this game, the highlighted series of the weekend there. I struggled with this one here because normally I get the Dodgers at home at plus money or nearly even money. Like that's like a principal bet. You almost automatically take it. But Tony Gonsolin really makes it tough. 4 earned runs allowed in each of his last 2 starts, including 8 walks over 9 innings pitched. And he's going against the pitcher in Max Fried, who's only allowed more than 2 runs once this season. That was his first start on March 29th. And that was where there only still only 2 earned runs in that outing even. So huge mismatch in favor of the pitching matchup, at least in favor of the Yankees. However, Nick, the Dodgers have a 342 WOBA against lefties. Overall at home is 374 at home with a WOBA. So this is a team that is just fantastic hitting at home, fantastic hitting against lefties. The bullpen, though, is the other thing that's another factor in me kind of leaning when where I'm going with this one here, and that's the over on the 9 runs scored at minus 105. I think that's the route I'm going. I'm seeing now that we're seeing it at minus 108. Still go that route. Bullpen struggling. They got 5 guys on the IL. Tanner Scott really struggled in his last outing. He's had 3 bad outings lately. Things are so bad for the Dodgers in the bullpen. They just traded for Alexis Diaz from the Reds, who is just buried in that organization. Gave up a guy that's in rookie ball. So the Reds just couldn't wait to get rid of Diaz, unfortunately. Yeah. But So my bet is the over 9 runs.
All right, so we like the over in Yankees-Dodgers. I know you're looking at the under in Tigers-Royals tonight. That's Casey Mize going up against Seth Lugo.
Yeah, the Royals, they're getting healthy in that rotation again. Lugo's back off the IL today, returning from a finger injury. We might see Cole Reagan's back this weekend as well. Starting pitching is the key for them. Kauffman Stadium, got to always like pitching there. Mize, he's a little bit of a concern. I think there is some ticking time bomb possibilities with him, but his walks are so low. That's the one thing I like. Ks are up to 21.8%. It was 17.3 last year. He's not a 245 ERA pitcher. It's more like a mid threes pitcher probably, but even still at 8.5 runs, I still like that under at -105.
Got a couple strikeout props that you want to highlight in Twins Mariners. This one in Seattle, Mariners -142 on the money line. If you like the Twins, you can grab them at +120. Low total here, all the way down at 7. Zebby Matthews going up against Brian Wu. So what are we looking at in terms of those K props?
So first of all, Zebby Matthews struck out 9 last time out against the Royals, 5 and only 3 innings against the Brewers in their first time out. Noteworthy, though, 3 innings and 4 innings each time on his start. So you're talking about a pitcher who's probably not going to go deep into games, but he does miss bats. The Mariners have been struggling a little bit more offensively lately after a hot start to the season. Meanwhile, Brian Wu, I've used the phrase house cat before. He is the ultimate house cat. Only 3 starts so far, but a 0.93 ERA at home. And that over the course of his career, he's been significantly better at home. He's a good pitcher, period. Don't get me wrong. But at home, 2.47 ERA at home, 0.88 whip versus a 3.72 ERA on the road. So I like all things Brian Wu tonight. Because the Mariners aren't playing well, I'm kind of avoiding the money line. And in fact, I might even go counter and go Minnesota +120, but I don't like going against Wu. So I'll just take the Wu strikeouts at at over 6.5 strikeouts at +125 and the Zebby Matthews strikeouts over 5.5 at -105.
Rays Astros, Jeff, another game with a low total sitting at 7.5. Ryan Pepiot going up against Framber Valdez. I know you are eyeing that total. 7.5, not low enough.
Not low enough, I think. I think Ryan Pepiot is a pretty good pitcher. And I think even though he's been, you know, even though the Astros have a bunch of right-handers, and that does concern me because Pepiot actually has reverse splits, 4.19 ERA, 1.46 whip versus righties. I think some of that was generated at Steinbrenner Field and some of that oppo power that sometimes happens there. So I think he's kind of been victimized by that. You know, Framber Valdez, solid pitcher at home. I like the under 7.5 at -108. Fantasy note real quick, Chandler Simpson just got sent down by the Rays, 19 stolen bases in a month. Great 1 month fantasy ad. We'll see how long you can keep him on your roster. Jake Mangum is back from the IL.
I know you're looking at the Phillies money line tonight, by the way, to finish out Phillies home for DL Hall and the Milwaukee Brewers. DL Hall set to serve as the opener tonight for Quinn Priester. It's time to close out the show, close out the week with our GBank Best Bets of the Night. They're brought to you by GBank, which is introducing the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VSiN. All you need to do is open a GBank Visa Signature credit card, and in the first 90 days, deposit and play through $1,000 at First Bet to trigger that $500 trifecta. If you do that, you'll receive $200 in cashback rewards on your GBank Visa Signature credit card. First Bet will give you a $100 deposit match, and VSiN steps in to complete the trifecta with a free VSiN Pro subscription through August 31st. That's a $200 value. It's the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VSiN. Head over to VSiN.com/GBank. That's VSIN.com/GBank. This one-time promotion is limited to customers opening a new account in response to this offer and will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts. Apply today over at VSiN.com/GBank. Terms and conditions apply. Jeff, we have no NBA tonight. That means the impossible has happened. I have a baseball bet, but I will let you lead us off. You got a money line play for tonight.
Yeah, underdog Pirates money line +164. Padres have lost 6 out of the last 10. Decent pitching matchup, Mitch Keller versus Nick Pivetta. I'll take the price at +164.
I'm taking the over 9.5. Red Sox, Braves. Sox slumping a little bit lately. They're still one of the best offenses in baseball. Saw the Braves put up 9 runs in that late game last night. Really don't trust either pitcher in this matchup. Grant Holmes going up against Lucas Giolito. Over 9.5 in Sox, Braves. That's going to wrap it for us this week. Make it rain with Adam Schein coming up next.